You want to grab your Bibles, go to the verse that's on the screen. Matthew chapter 13 is going to be the verse that this class is based on tonight. Josh had first two classes where he introduced this topic of the Christian and his influence. And tonight and next week, Josh is going to be out of town next week. He asked me to fill in for him these two classes. And most of this particular study is based upon a book that Brother Wendell Winkler wrote. I don't know when that was published, probably early 70s if I had to guess, called The Christian and His Influence. And it's a book that's been used a lot in Bible classes and various studies over the years because it is very thorough in the discussion of this particular topic. And so he's got a chapter in that book that talks about the influence of leaven, and so we're going to be using that as our guide for tonight. But look at Matthew chapter 13. When you look at Matthew chapter 13, you're looking at this whole chapter is full of parables. Sometimes I would call these the kingdom parables because these are a lot of parables that begin by saying the kingdom of heaven is like this, the kingdom of heaven is like this, the kingdom of heaven is like this. And some of these are multiple verse parables. You know, the parable of the soils at the beginning of the chapter is several verses. The parable of the wheat and the tares, and then the parable of the dragnet. Those are longer parables, but here in verse 33, you got a one-verse parable, rather short. So Matthew 13, verse 33, another parable Jesus spoke to them. The kingdom of heaven is like leaven, which a woman took and hid in three measures of meal, till it was all leavened. What do you know about leaven? Great, that's wonderful. I'm glad you don't know a whole lot about leaven because that's what we're talking about tonight. It's okay if I ask a question if you want to give an answer. It will not be frowned upon. Bonnie?
It's actually
a corruption. Yeah. That's kind of funny, isn't it? I mean, we think about leaven and the way Jesus used it, and we think, oh, you know, this is a good thing. But you do have to cook it in order to get the poison out of it. Jesus, this isn't part of this topic, this lesson tonight, but there's another place that Jesus warned about leaven. Here he's saying something good, that the kingdom of heaven is like leaven, and we're going to talk about some qualities that leaven has. But do you remember another place where he warned about leaven as a negative thing? Richard?
Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees.
Yes, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. Of course, when the disciples heard him say that, their first thought was, oh no, we didn't bring any bread. You know, they totally weren't ready for whatever Jesus was going to talk about. But what was Jesus talking about when he said, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees? What were they to be watching out for? Where they don't go to the Pharisees' bakery. You know, they weren't baking the leaven out, and you might get food poisoning, so don't go to that bakery. Go to the Jews. I mean, what? Say it again, Novell.
The influence of the Pharisees.
Okay, the influence of the Pharisees. Who said something? Was that Dirk? Okay, beware of the influence of the Pharisees. Well, what was wrong with their influence? Say it again. Ah, what they were preaching. Beware, and it's interesting he uses the word leaven. He could have just said, beware of the Pharisees. That would have been sufficient, wouldn't it? Beware of the words, the teachings of the Pharisees. That would have been sufficient. But by putting the word leaven in there, gives a whole nother depth to what he is saying. Because whatever they're saying, whatever they're teaching, is influencing others. Is that true? Were the Pharisees influencing other people? Of the various sects of the Jews, the S-E-C-T-S of the Jews, what other ones can you think of besides the Pharisees? Sadducees? The Essenes? Those are the three that we think of right off. Which was the largest group? Pharisees. Which was the most influential group? Pharisees. Which one did Jesus have the most run-ins with? The Pharisees. Who didn't believe in the resurrection? Ah, okay, I'm just seeing if you're paying attention. if you're going to just say the Pharisees, because that's what we're doing. But that's the group of people that Jesus dealt with quite often. I don't think we're going to get to all 13 qualities of leaven, but in Wendell Winkler's book, he's got 13 different things to say about leaven, and many of them I never would have thought of, but they're absolutely the case. So, Jesus says here, the kingdom of heaven is like leaven. What's the kingdom of heaven? The church. You fast forward three chapters into chapter 16, and Jesus defines for us the kingdom of heaven, says he's going to build the church and he's going to give the keys of the kingdom, telling us that the church and the kingdom are one and the same thing. So insert that phrase, insert that thought here into verse 33. The church is like leaven. Church? The church is like leaven? What is the church made up of? People. What kind of people? Nice people? Mean people? Rich people? Poor people? All of the above. What'd you say, Freddie? Christians. Thank you. That kind of people. So the church is made up of Christians. So when Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is like leaven, what's he talking about? Or maybe the question should be, who is he talking about? Talking about us. Are Christians in this world, are we to be like leaven? Yeah. So when you think about the Christian's influence, sometimes we think about, well, the Christians are like the salt. Christians are like a light. Those are both concepts about the influence that we have, but Christians are like leaven. What does that mean? Let's think about some of these qualities as we go through this and make applications of these, because Jesus is saying that the church, Christians who make up the church, they are like leaven that a woman hid in a piece of meal and a piece of dough until it was all leaven. First thing to see about leaven is that leaven is a silently working force. Is that true? Can you see leaven at work? Well, not any more than you can watch a tree grow. I mean, you can, but I mean, it's like sitting there and watching all day, not the most. And so it's not something that you readily see. It's not something that you readily hear. It just sort of happens. How does that apply? Bonnie?
Could be compared to
another thing.
Sure. Leaven, we can see the
bread
rise. Mm-hmm. We can't really see
why. Right. We can see the effects. And so the leaven is there doing its work, and it's doing it silently, and we know it's at work, even though it's not something that's just all, it's not just something that's shouting at us that it's doing it. How does that apply to Christians? Are we supposed to be drawing a lot of attention to me? Are people supposed to see all of the attention drawn to the individual Christian, to where he is heralded and applauded for all of the great things that he does as a Christian? Is that my goal? To get the attention? What did Jesus say in Matthew chapter 6 about individuals who were drawing attention to themselves? Is that a good thing? Those who were going out and they were doing their charitable deeds, he says in Matthew chapter 6, to be seen of men. He said, they have their reward. What was their reward? It was exactly what they were seeking. They wanted to be seen of men. Is that where I need to be as a Christian? Is my object as a Christian to get people to see me? To get people to applaud me and think, wow, what a great guy. David's such a wonderful person. No. Okay, so what's the opposite of that? If my goal is not to be everybody looking at me or to be boasting about what I'm doing, what is the opposite? How am I supposed to be like leaven? How does that work? What'd you say? Humility. I've got to be somebody who's humble. It's interesting in a lot of these, and we're not going to look up all of these verses, but it's interesting in these verses how often, 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 11, 1 Timothy 2, go to 1 Timothy 2, because we got Titus chapter 3 right after it, so we'll be in the neighborhood. Go to 1 Timothy chapter 2. And then we're going to jump over to Titus chapter 3. And as you're turning there, think about the works, not the works of the flesh, but the fruit of the Spirit. When you think about the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians chapter 5, and obviously I don't know if you can quote the fruit of the Spirit and what those qualities are. The fruit of the Spirit involves love, joy, peace, long-suffering. Do I need to have long-suffering as a Christian? Kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Look in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 2. We are to pray for kings and all who are in authority. Why? Obviously, there's multiple reasons that we ought to pray for kings. There's multiple reasons we ought to pray for those who are in authority. But one reason he gives here in verse 2 is so that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. Does that have any application today? Should we be praying for those in our country who are in authority? Yes. What's one reason we should do it? Multiple reasons we ought to do it. But one reason here is so that I, as a Christian, can just lead a quiet and peaceable life. Go over to Titus chapter 3. Similar concept over here. But since we're in the neighborhood, look in Titus chapter 3. Titus chapter 3, verse 1 begins, "Remind them, Christians, remind them to be subject to rulers and authorities." It's interesting, we see these concepts paralleled. "Remind them to be subject to rulers and authorities, to obey, to be ready for every good work, to speak evil of" who? Do we have a right to speak evil of that politician I don't like? Do I have a right to speak evil of that coworker that drives me nuts? I don't have a right to speak evil of anybody. Speak evil of no one. Continuing, "to be peaceable," is that me? "Gentle," is that me? "Showing all humility to nice people," right? To Christians. Showing all humility to Christians. That's what he meant, right? It's not what he said. Showing all humility to all men. Is that a challenging verse? Isn't it interesting that he starts this chapter by saying, remind the Christians about this? Do we need to be reminded that we need to be peaceable and gentle and humble people towards everybody? Here I am as a Christian trying to influence the world. How is my influence for Christ supposed to be spread? With humility. Not shouting out there, not trying to draw a whole bunch of attention to me, but just trying to lead a quiet, peaceable, gentle, humble life. That's an interesting quality. I don't know if you've thought about that for leaven before, but that's how leaven works. That's how the Christian influence ought to work. It's there, you know it's there, but it doesn't draw all of the attention to itself. Another quality about leaven is that leaven influences the lump of dough. Leaven influences the lump of dough, but is leaven itself influenced? No. Jesus said that when you put the leaven into the meal, it keeps on working until all of the meal, all of the dough is leavened. But when you put leaven into that meal, the leaven doesn't stop being leaven. Now, as you think about how does that apply to us? You put the leaven in, but the leaven doesn't stop being leaven, even though it's been inserted into a different environment. How does that apply to us, Diane? That's it. We are in the world. Here's this leaven put into this lump of dough. Brand new place. Leaven doesn't stop being leaven. Here we are as a Christian living in this world. Do I stop being a Christian? Am I to be influenced by the world? Well, no. And we know those verses. We know Romans 12 and verse 2. Do not be conformed to this world. That's easy, right? That's an easy thing to apply. That's an easy verse to follow. We can quote it, Now, that's a verse that really only applies to teenagers who are really individuals who are influenced by others, but you grow out of that eventually, right? I mean, eventually you grow out of being influenced by the world and you just get smarter and more mature and you're like, that's dumb, I'm not going to be influenced by the world, right? Wrong, okay. It's just ladies who said wrong, so maybe it's the men. Maybe it's men who have got this figured out and men are not influenced by the world. Does this apply to all of us? Here's leaven. When leaven gets inserted into that dough, it keeps on being leaven. When Christians are living in this world, Christians are not to become more like the world in which they live, but Christians are trying to help the world in which they live become more like Jesus. That's hard. And this is totally subjective. When I say, do you think, it's totally subjective. Do you think that's getting harder these days? Do you think it's getting harder to influence the world for Christ? Now, that's not an excuse for us, right? That's not, it's getting harder, so I'm not going to try as hard. Well, if it's getting harder, that means I've got to try harder. What is the last verse of Romans chapter 12? Romans chapter 12 and verse 21. You know what that verse says? Do not be overcome by evil. Okay, but do what? Overcome evil with good. Oh, that's easy, right? That's super easy. Here's the evil world we live in, and I'll just overcome it with good. And the world will accept me, right? The world's going to stomp all over you. So how do you maintain an influence in an environment that doesn't want you so that you are not influenced? Oh, say that again. Okay, so surround yourself with other Christians. Who had their hand up? Is that Jackie? Somebody? Nobody had their hand up? Okay, Stephen. Yeah. So how do we speak up? How do we verbalize things so that, one, we keep the attention off of ourselves and we point it to Christ? That's the first point. And two, so that people may listen and not immediately turn us off. And three, we don't get ourselves fired. As if that would be the worst thing that might happen. How do we verbalize and speak and stand up for truth in the right way? Because Stephen's exactly right, isn't he? I mean, the more we remain silent, what are we doing? We're blending in. Okay. By our actions. Can you think of any Bible characters that I think about, and I think Josh mentioned Daniel last week. But you remember Daniel in Daniel chapter 1 going to Babylon? When Daniel was taken to Babylon in that first wave of captives, we don't know specifically the age of Daniel, but it's believed he's somewhere around 15, 16, 17 years of age. Okay? Is he a young critter? Yep, he's younger than anybody in this room by a long shot. So he's 15, 16, 17 years of age. And he gets over there, and we're going to train you to become a Babylonian. We're going to train you to serve in the court of the king. That's going to involve your name. We're going to change your name. That's going to involve your identity. That's going to involve A, B, C, D, everything. And it's going to involve what you eat. And so here is the food from the king, and this is what you need to eat. It's interesting where Daniel drew a line. Could he control what they called him? I don't want to be called Belshazzar. My name is Daniel. Could he control what they were going to call him? Can't control what they're going to call you. But when they said, this is what you're going to eat, can you control what you put in your mouth? Well, Daniel could. And Daniel chapter 1 verse 8 says that he resolved in his heart that he was not going to defile himself with the food from the king's table. Was he rude about it? When you read Daniel chapter 1, do you see Daniel's being rude? Get this junk out of my face. Do you see Daniel being rude? No. In fact, you see Daniel, we might say, bending over backwards to be kind and respectful. You see Daniel saying, you know what? Let's go this other route, but let's see if this is not a better route for me and my friends to go. And so we've got to be ones who stand up and to take a stand, but to make sure that we're doing it respectfully. Make sure that we are standing on principle where we can stand on principle. Understanding sometimes folks are not going to listen to us. And they are going to throw it back in our face. And there are some things we cannot control. We can't control what people are going to call us, what names they're going to throw at us, what labels they're going to attack. Oh, you're a Christian. Oh, you're a this, you're a that. Okay, you call me whatever you want to call me. That's okay. But as one who needs to be leaven in this earth, one, I need to... That first point silently does not mean we keep our mouths shut. We understand that. That first point is the attention isn't drawn to me. This point is I need to make sure that I'm doing what I can not to be influenced. And let me tie this next point in with that second point. And that is that when Jesus talks about leaven here, he's indicating that this leaven is working consistently and persistently, even though when you put that leaven in the dough is larger, the majority is against the leaven. What does Jesus say in the parable? That she puts it in the meal till, do you see the word till? Till it was all leavened. What does that word till mean? It took time. Here's the leaven in this meal, and it is working, working, working persistently, unceasingly, until it had accomplished its task. It didn't stop. It didn't stop what it was, even though the majority of the surrounding material there was against it. It did not stop. And so we know the expression, you know, about quitters never win and winners never quit. But do you ever picture Jesus quitting in his endeavors to reach the lost? You think he ever got discouraged? Did he ever get discouraged with his disciples? Let me ask that first. Did he ever get discouraged with his disciples? He did. And you read some passages where it almost seems like Jesus was surprised, and it wasn't that he was surprised, it was he was a little upset and discouraged that they weren't quite where they needed to be yet. But did he quit? Well, we don't see Jesus quitting. In Hebrews 12 and verse 2, what's the chapter right before Hebrews chapter 12? Hebrews chapter 11. Good. Okay. So Hebrews, I don't ask hard questions intentionally anyway. So Hebrews chapter 11 is about what? That's your faith chapter. What kind of faith? Just, oh yeah, I believe in God. Yeah, he's a great guy. I hang out with him on Sundays. He's really fun. Is it that kind of faith? No. When you read, look in Hebrews chapter 11. I wasn't going to spend time here, but just before we get to chapter 12, when you think Hebrews 11, do you think by faith Abraham, by faith Noah? Is that what you think sometimes of who we read about in Hebrews? I mean, I think that's what I think about. By faith Noah built the ark, by faith Noah left Ur, by faith. And we read about these characters and by faith what they did. But there's a section at the end here. Look starting in verse 32. Hebrews chapter 11, starting verse 32. But what more shall I say? That's a good preacher line, isn't it? What more shall I say? For the time would fail me. But he's going to keep going anyway, right? I mean, preachers always say, you know, I don't have enough time. And then what does the preacher do? keeps right on going. Well, look, he keeps right on going. For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets. Can you believe he would leave some of those out of the by faith this person did? I mean, he just didn't have room. But here's what I want you to see. Who through faith, that's the key, through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead raised to life again. Others were, here's a list for you, tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. Still others had trial of mockings and scourgings, yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two. They were tempted, they were slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth. You read that, and you think, why in the world did those people endure all of that? Because they were followers of God. And as followers of God, they were just going to keep right on doing whatever it was that God wanted them to. And it's on the heels of those verses. It's on the heels of those verses in chapter 12 and verse 1. On the heels of all of this that these people endured, he comes chapter 12, verse 1, he says, therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, who are those great a cloud of witnesses? The people we just read about in chapter 11. Let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with what? Endurance, the race that is set before us. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him, what did he do to the cross? Endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who did what? Endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. Three times in those three verses, you got endurance, endured, endured. And what he's telling us is to don't just look at these people in chapter 11. Look at Jesus. These people in chapter 11, they didn't give up. If they had to be sawn in two because they were a follower of God, so be it. But he says, you know what's even better than that? Look at Jesus. What did Jesus have to prove? Jesus endured the cross. So he says, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls, look at Jesus who never quit. That's what leaven does. Leaven never quits. We read about Paul. Paul never quit. And so the Bible tells us we don't ever need to quit. You know 1 Corinthians 12, verse 58, right? Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast. What's the word after steadfast? Immovable. Always abounding in the work of the Lord. Sometimes we only quote up to that point. You know what the rest of the verse says? Knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. If the rest of the world doesn't care, who does? Who's still watching? Your labor's not in vain in the Lord. Be steadfast. Keep on going. Be immovable. Always abounding in the work of the Lord. There was a guy, when was this? End of the 19th century and early years, I think, of the 20th. It was very early years of the 20th century. Guy by the name of Robert Peary, I think is how you would say his name. It's spelled P-E-A-R-Y. You ever heard of Robert Peary? Over a period of, I think, 23 or 25 years, over a period of about 23 or more years, he had made seven expeditions to discover the North Pole. And he had failed seven times over a 23 or so year period of time. He didn't give up. And the reason we know the name of Robert Peary is because he tried again the eighth time. And he's the one that gets the credit, apparently, for having discovered the North Pole. We wouldn't know that guy's name if he had given up. We wouldn't know the guy's name if he hadn't been persistent. But think about all that he would endure in trying to, and you think, boy, that's kind of, in the long run, kind of insignificant, right? Woo-hoo, you discover the North Pole. Yep, North Pole's there. Is our endeavor a little bit more important? God doesn't want us to give up. He says the kingdom of heaven, the church, the people, the Christians, are like leaven. What's one of the properties, qualities of leaven? When you put it in that dough, it keeps working. Jesus says, till the whole thing is leavened. Once you put it in, can you stop it? Once you put that leaven in, can you stop it? You can't. And somebody says, no, you can go and cut it out. Too late. If you try to go and cut it out, it's too late. It has already started. It has already started the process. And so that needs to be us. That needs to be the determination that we have as Christians. Our world, yes, it seems like it is getting harder and harder. But our determination needs to be, I'm going to keep pressing on even if everybody is against me. I'm going to keep pressing on. And it's what Amy said earlier. Look around tonight. We've got a lot of folks up at camp. But does that mean we don't have anybody here? I mean, look around. Does this not help us to know we're not alone in this endeavor? I'm going to skip this next one. There's 13 of these. We don't have time to get to all of them. But I like this one. Leaven must be mixed with the substance in order to influence that substance. Jesus said in the parable that the leaven was hid. That means it was put inside this measure of meal and that had to be there in order to make contact and to start its work. What do we have to do? Can we just stay inside this building and get in a holy huddle and hang out with each other and not go anywhere else? No. That's not our job. Look at Matthew chapter 9. Look at this passage. Do I have this on the screen? Look at Matthew chapter 9. Jesus got some criticism. Well, Jesus got some criticism about a lot of stuff. Matthew chapter 9, Jesus calls Matthew to be one of his followers. What was Matthew's great, wonderful job? What did he do for a living? Tax collect. Those are your favorite people, right? I mean, those are your BFFs, or tax collectors, right? Here's Jesus selecting Matthew to be one of his followers. Look in verse 10, Matthew chapter 9, verse 10. It happened as Jesus sat at the table in the house with Matthew, that behold, I love the word behold because it's like, look, can you believe it? Behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. How many? Many. It wasn't just that Jesus was hanging out with Matthew. That was bad enough. It wasn't just like one or two of Matthew's buddies came around. Many tax collectors and sinners came and sat down with Jesus and his disciples. And when the stuck-up Pharisees saw it, they said to his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? They are so self-righteous, it's disgusting. Your teacher? You think he's all that? He's hanging out with tax collectors and sinners. When Jesus heard that, wait a minute, who were they talking to in verse 11? Were they talking to Jesus? No, they said to his disciples. And Jesus is like, oh yeah? When Jesus heard that, he said to them, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, Pharisees. For I did not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. Did Jesus have to make contact with sinners in order to be able to come and to save sinners. Did Jesus come to hang out with just those people who had everything right in their lives? Interesting. Were the Pharisees perfect? Were they sinful? Were the apostles, the disciples, perfect? Were they sinful? Everybody Jesus came and talked to and dealt with was a sinner. And yet, he did not keep himself aloft. He did not keep himself away from them. And so when he prayed in John chapter 17 for his disciples, he prayed, "I do not pray that you should take them out of the world." I don't pray that you should take, I pray that you keep them from the devil, that you keep them from the evil one, but I don't pray that you take them out of the world. If we could be separated from the sinners, would that help us not to be influenced by sin? Maybe a little. I mean, is the devil going to get to us whether we're hanging out, hanging around sinners or not? Now, is there a balance? Is there a balance? 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33 says, "Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits." So do I need to hang around and have friends and company with those who are living in sin and that be those I surround myself with? That's not what we're saying. That's 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33 on the one hand. But go to 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 5. Back up 10 chapters. So it's the same book. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33 says, don't go out and hang out and make company with those who are sinners and those who are of the world because they're going to influence you. But back up to 1 Corinthians chapter 5. When you hear 1 Corinthians chapter 5, what's this chapter about? 1 Corinthians 5, what's this chapter about? Withdrawing from a brother who's living in sin. So verse 9 of 1 Corinthians chapter 5, Paul says, "I wrote to you in my epistle not to keep company with sexually immoral people. Yet, I certainly did not mean with the sexually immoral people of this world, or the covetous, or the extortioners, or idolaters. Since then, you would need to do what?" If you're not supposed to be around sinners, then what would you have to do? You'd have to be, who was it? Bezos, who just went to space for like 2 minutes and came back. You'd have to go out of the world. Who was it? Bezos, yeah. So, and if you've got $100 million, you can do it too for, 11-minute trip, whatever it was. But Paul says, I'm not telling you to not keep company with them, because then you'd have to go out of the world. So he says in verse 11, I'm telling you not to keep company with a brother who is living in sin. And that's the context of 1 Corinthians chapter 5. So how do you balance 1 Corinthians 5 and verse 10, that you're going to be around sinners, and 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33, don't be around sinners lest they influence you and you turn away from the Lord? How do you balance that one? Is that a contradiction? Lord doesn't know what he's talking about. If I am to be leaven, that's the point of our discussion tonight, and we only have about a minute left for this. If I am to be leaven, what do I have to do? I have to be among people. Dirk?
You have to do what the leaven is
supposed to do, not what the sinner does. Yes. So I have to be the leaven and not be the world around me. I have to be the one that is leavening and influencing and not in the reverse. So when Jesus is talking in this parable about the leaven and the influence that it had, he says that the meal, the dough, would have had to have been remained unleavened unless the leaven had been put there. If the meal had never had any leaven put in it, could it have been leavened? Well, no, you got to have leaven in order to be leavened. Can the world be saved if there are no Christians going out into the world to save it? No. That's the point. Is that as a Christian, my job is to go into all the world and find those who need the gospel and teach them the gospel as leaven. That's my responsibility. Not to be influenced, but to influence for Christ by using the gospel, teaching the gospel. by living the gospel in the school, in the workplace, wherever it is, so that others see a difference in me, and I might have an opportunity to speak up and to say something that will influence them and lead them down the right path. You may be interested. When we get this lesson online and we upload the PowerPoint, there are 13 principles, 13 qualities here that are kind of interesting to look at all of them and see what is leaven, how does that apply to me? That's all of the time that we've got tonight. I know they've got to ring the second bell. But thank you all very much for participating and being a part of this class tonight.